Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back to rewind this episode of Survivor 49. We are talking our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments of the episode. And we locked in two pretty fast when we were planning out this podcast. And we had a little bit of difficulty with our outwit, but eventually we succeeded in getting a topic. But it's been very different from our last few podcasts. We actually had two topics right off the bat, and we're watching a great episode over on the Patreon. So I'm excited to talk this episode, John.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I think I've gotten to the point where I'm over Survivor 50 of season 49. I don't know. Like, I know that might sound weird to everyone who's been listening to us all season long, who's been listening just to the specialists and every podcast out there all season long, right? And or been on Twitter and seen like everyone complaining about, you know, knowing who's on season 50's really ruined this. Mm-hmm. I think like a lot of that does come from the fact that I am watching this season in a very different way than I've ever watched a Survivor season before, where mm-hmm. I watched the East Coast airing so you and I can plan this podcast, McKenna. Right. And then I'm watching it with a bunch of people who don't know who's on Survivor 50 afterwards. And being able to kind of watch their reactions to it and just like see a more casual view of Survivor, even though there are a couple super fans in there, but they're just not the super fans who are like out there looking for this information. Like they're not to our level of super fandom, but they are people who've watched every episode of Survivor. It's really changed my light of it. And I know there were a lot of complaints about this week's episode with, you know, it being like, oh, is it Rizzo or is it Alex going home? But that I got to the point where it's like, I just don't care at this point. Because I think we're almost at the point where it's safe to say Rizzo and Savannah, based on like what we've seen on 50, have already cemented themselves in 50. Like we know they're on 50, but like they're playing hard enough that you could see why production would put them there. So I think we're starting to enter the danger zone for those two players. Do I think they're going home anytime soon? Not at all. But now it's like, okay, Rizzo, you've held your idol for 3 straight tribal councils now. Like, is that going to keep going? Are you going to play it one too far and that's the one you go home? Are we going to get this big idol play at some point? I don't know. And we're getting, and Phil was talking about it on Digging Deeper with Blake and Alexa just before this. We're at a point where, honestly, there are like 6 people in this season who could still win this season. And we're kind of just letting our knowledge of Survivor 50 get in the way of that. And now that I'm kind of like getting to the point where I was like, no, I can let it go now. I'm enjoying this season so much more. And I was already enjoying this season.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm quite there yet because I feel like I won't be there yet until the finale or maybe the episode right before. Because that's when you kind of become a bit more of a quote-unquote legend is in the finale. So I wouldn't expect them to be booted before 5. But then again, we have Tiffany, who's like who's the lowest placing 50 member. Mm-hmm. So it is possible that they go anytime now. But with being from a season right before, I feel like they make a deep run. So it's like when I do fantasy points, I'm not putting any points on Rizzo and Savannah going home for a few more episodes here.
And I totally get that. I think what it's coming down to for me now is Savannah might not have done enough game-wise to get it to seem like she's on 50, but she's bringing a character that we haven't really gotten in Survivor. And I think it's been a lot of the discussion that like Blake's been really focusing on is that Savannah is like, and a lot of people are like, oh, she's this villain, but she's not quite a villain, but she's approaching the game in a different way than we've seen in the new era. And you kind of need that type of character there. And that's what's making her entertaining to watch, right? Mm-hmm. She's being shown as opposition. And she's doing it in a way where it's like you can root for her 1 minute and then like root against her the next minute.
Yeah.
And Rizzo, I think, is actually now, after last night's episode, is showing that he is a very good Survivor player. I've been saying it. Everyone hates me for saying it, but I don't care. Like, all of my casual friends are like, how can you be, like, so high on Rizzo? I'm like, guys, he's playing a phenomenal Survivor game. Like, the fact that he's holding on to this idol is impressive enough. The fact that he's holding on to this idol and seemingly influencing votes is spectacular. Like, it is a whole level of, if he wasn't a 25-year-old, we would be singing the praises of this kid all the time. But he's 25, and people are, I think, despite the fact that for a long stretch of Survivor, people were looking at like 25-year-olds, which is kind of like your average age group, it's on the younger side of casting now. And it's coming across that way, I think. And I think that is deterring people from properly giving the praise Rizzo deserves at this point.
But see, you called him a kid here. He's a god.
Yeah, I know. It's true. He is.
So give him his respect. Call him a god. Alrighty. We are going to get into the meat and potatoes. The nitty gritty, the bones of the podcast. Here we go. We are talking our outwit moment, which is informed on all sides. So we had a few people here in this episode. We mainly had Sophie talk about it, Yellow Sophie talk about it, how she was getting information from the Rizzo side of things. She was getting information from the Christina Steven side of things. But we also had a little bit of Jawan getting information from all sides, and Sage as well was getting a lot of information. So they were able to make their decision on where to vote because they had all the information laid out for them and they chose the correct path for them.
Yeah, it's the very interesting thing about this episode is there was just so much talk about playing the middle. And this is actually why our outwit was so hard for us to determine this week, because we didn't want to go back to the same well of playing the middle that we've gone to over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we can go to those ones that everyone really thinks of, right? Like
Sarah Lucina.
I think Sarah Lucina is actually an okay comparison to Alex, because Alex never felt like he was in this demanding spot, mm-hmm. or felt like he thought he was in a demanding spot like Sarah did in Cagayan.
Right.
But it's similar because you have that person in the middle being taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't quite work here. And instead, what we're really seeing, and it might be like editing tricks, it might just be how it's actually going out there, because it does feel like we're getting really into voting blocks this mm-hmm. season. And which is a stark contrast. I think we notice it more as a stark contrast to 48, which was like that solid rock hard alliance instead. Mm-hmm. But when you have people like Sophie Segretti saying, oh, I'm like playing in the middle because I have all this information coming to me. I'm getting informed by both sides. I can make the most informed decision. Sage and Jawan are saying the same thing. Alex is like intentionally being in the middle. And as Rizzo pointed out, he is forcing sides so that he can ride the middle.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much focus on the middle in this season that we had to talk about it today, but how could we talk about it? And by focusing on the fact that there are people making decisions here that don't quite make sense with the edit that's going on, like mm-hmm. the fact that Sage and Jawan did decide to go again with the Rizzo Savannah side is curious. Like, we've seen Jawan talk about the fact that he has a close connection with Rizzo in the last couple of episodes now. Phil broke down on Wednesday that this is them voting this way leaves them with the least amount of people in opposition to them and mad at them, and the people who don't really have any wiggle room being mad at them. So mm-hmm. it probably makes sense for Sage and Jawan to make this decision. But the point is that they're getting the information so they can make that informed decision, so that they can even go through that analysis, even if it's not the analysis they're going through.
Yeah.
They have the possibility of being able to sit down and be like, oh, hey, if we vote Rizzo here and he plays his idol, we have three people mad at us. Because it seems very clear at this point mm-hmm. that Sophie Segretti is in with that group, that trio.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have them voting out Alex here, and it's like, okay, we have Steven and Christina mad at us. Where are they going to go? They're not really talking to that side at all.
Right. So After seeing this, I thought immediately of Laurel and Donathan from Ghost Island. I am currently working my way through seasons, and I am on Ghost Island. So it's at front of mind for me right now. And they are in the middle because they formed really close bonds with Dom and Wendell, who are in the dominant Navidi alliance. But then they are also old Malolo, and Malolo is on the bottom. So you have Libby, Michael, and Jenna really vying for their votes. Or they think Laurel and Donathan have got us. They're in with us. They tell them everything on their side. Dom and Wendell trust Laurel and Donathan. They are telling them the vote on the Navidi side of things. And it happens for multiple votes in Ghost Island where they decide who do we vote out? Where do we go? What's the vote here? Do we vote out Chris? Do we vote out Libby? Like, when do we take out Dom and Wendell? Is it now? Do we go for Kellen? Like, they have so many informed decisions throughout the entire merge of Ghost Island. Do they make the correct ones? Clearly not. But they did advance into the finale of the game.
I think why people might forget that Donathan and Laurel play this role in Ghost Island is because a lot of people, when they think of Laurel in general, right? Like, it's like, oh, Laurel is so tight with Dom and Wendell. She goes to the final three with them. She casts that winning vote there. And you kind of forget that they did start on opposite tribes and they did have that flow of information. And I think the big comparison here is they're a duo in the middle of this game who aren't associated strictly with one side.
Correct. And like, that's they're what I not full Malolo, but they are Malolo. They're mm-hmm. not associated at all with Dom and Wendell, even though they swapped a bunch of times swapped initially with them, and then they each swapped into the three tribes in a pair together, and they worked closely.
And that's exactly how they compare to Juwan and Sage, in my opinion, because Juwan and Sage, they are Ulis, but they also have this opportunity to kind of work with the Hinas based on the relationships they've made with Steven and everything like that. And we've seen them vote Uli in favor of the Ulis for the last two votes now.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not getting to a point where Rizzo and Savannah and Sophie Bellarity are at a point where they're complacent with the fact that they do have Juwan on stage, right? Like, we see these questions of, like, can we trust Juwan? Like, can we trust Juwan to make this vote?
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of puts into perspective the fact that these two, despite the fact that they have their associations with either side as it is, they have the bottoms up alliance with Steven, they still just have this option of being a pair in the middle where they're being vied for. Like you said, right? Like, that's what's going on here. You have the bottom, like, you have those Malolos in Ghost Island vying for Laurel and Donathan. Right. And that's what gives them the option to kind of go back and forth as needed. Mm-hmm. And to help progress their games. And that's really where Sage and Juwan find themselves right now. Mm-hmm. They are in a position, and it's why we have conversations about them kind of being in this power position in this week's episode, because mm-hmm. they are. Quite frankly, no vote can really happen without Sage or Juwan involved.
Right. And we also have the Sophie side of things too. So where we're going to pull in, say, Ty and Ko Rong. He is one single person that is getting a bunch of information from Scott and Jason. He's getting information from Debbie and Aubrey. He's getting information from Julia. He's getting information from Michelle. Like, he is getting a lot of angles and decides when and where he's voting. Like, when he doesn't do the super idol, he just lets them go out. He made an informed decision because he knows what other people can offer him moving forward in the game.
Yeah, and I think the big thing that compares Ty to Sophie Zagretti here is we kind of get this exact same moment with Ty where he realizes he's not being viewed as much as a player in the game as he is a piece in the game, like Sophie was, right? When Sophie comes back from this split tribal council and realizes that everyone expected her to be God in that situation because Rizzo would have played the idol and that's where the votes would have landed.
Right.
It made her kind of reevaluate her placement in the game. And as we progress through Ko Rong, Tai kind of does the same thing, right? He evaluates where he is with the beauties, which ends up putting him in, like lumping him in with the boys at the merge, right? Mm-hmm. That's how he gets in with Kyle and, or Kyle Jason and Scott and Nick Mariano and everything at the merge, right? And then as that goes on and he kind of starts seeing how much Scott and Jason are just, you know, kind of
rubbing
pushing him around and like turning him off, right? And like showing him like, okay, they're just on this like war path. And
they're
And they don't really respect the fact that this is what how I want to play the game. This is how I want to approach the game. And they won't let me. They're kind of forcing me to play this game in a way I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
But and it gives him the opportunity to switch because he never really burns his bridges with that other side. And that's the one thing we really saw in this episode of 49. We didn't get as much Sophie playing both sides as we did Sophie in the middle in this episode, but we saw her talking to both sides, right? Like as Rizzo is telling like this plan to who's he telling it to? Is he telling it to Jawan at that point?
Maybe, yeah.
On the beach, and like Sophie Zagretti sitting right there as he's explaining this plan to get out Alex. And we see Sophie being the person that like Christina's talking to. And we see in the secret scene that Christina is like, oh my God, I have to work so hard just to like get Sophie back. Like, I feel like we've wronged Sophie here. So I want to gain her trust back is why I'm picking her first for this challenge.
Right.
So it really does feel reminiscent of Ty. And I don't think Sophie is as much of an outsider on the season as Ty was in Ko Rong.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's finding herself in this similar role where she is going to have the opportunity to kind of flip and flop between roles and ultimately probably shape where this game's going, which is not something I would have said in the pre-merge when we weren't seeing anything.
Yeah, and she won't get burned because they will need her for the vote at some point. Like, she won't burn one side by going with another one because the other side will still need her. Same with Ty. It's like you still need Ty for a vote. So it's going to be interesting to, like you said, to see how the game progresses and where she decides to place herself.
Yeah, and as much as I was talking about how Sage and Jawan have this opportunity still with Steven and Christina, Sophie might even have a better one because of the connection she has with them from the beginning of the game.
Yeah. Are we ready to move on to outplay?
Let's do it.
So we are talking two immunity necklaces here in our outplay because we had the first man and, well, not first, the last man and the last woman standing win immunity here.
They were actually sitting, to be clear.
Same difference. Win immunity. As I was looking through the seasons that had two immunity necklaces here, it either had it at the premiere, like in Gabon and Palau, where they could grab that immunity necklace, or it was at the merge. There were only two other episodes that did not have this specific twist at the merge. We had Worlds Apart and Winners at War. And so we decided to do Winners at War over on the Patreon. So that's episode 12, Friendly Fire. And John, I heard a little birdie told me you get half off your first month if you become a patron before the finale of Survivor.
That's right. We have a Patreon special on right now. Subscribe. In our first month, you'll get half off if you do so before the finale of Survivor 49. So you've got a couple weeks here. Check it out. There's so much content there. We'll break it down.
Pretty much a show every week.
Every day? Every day there's a show.
Every day. And from everybody here on the Specialist crew, we all have a show out over on the Patreon. So a lot of good content coming over there, especially from John and I every week watching a past episode of Survivor. Alrighty. So yes, like we said, two immunity necklaces. We are talking winners at war. So we have Denise and Tony here, but I want to just talk about Denise for a second because Denise has competed in two immunity necklaces three times and has all three won immunity. So twice in Winners at War and once in Philippines. Anytime this is offered to her, she wins immunity for the women.
Now, do we have to put a little bit of an asterisk on here because of how she wins it in this particular instance at Winners at War?
Yes, a little bit. But she seemed pretty solid and wasn't going to be stepping down for the food at all. So in Winners at War, Jeff, after 15 minutes, is like, all right, here's a tray of peanut butter, cookies, milk, chocolate, and anybody who wants to drop, do it. And then Kim and Michelle drop, and Denise just happens into immunity, and she doesn't even realize she does.
Yeah, this is interesting. So for this time when we see it, and this is another fascinating thing, is you never know what challenge is going to come out when Jeff pulls out two immunity necklaces. Obviously, we see the immunity necklaces after we're introduced to the challenge. But you can never be safely seeing like, this immunity challenge, it'll be two, totally, 100%.
Right.
Because, I mean, we had a brand new challenge in this episode of Survivor, which was fantastic. Actually, I quite like this challenge. It was different. Yeah.
Well, it was a different because if you are a listener here on The Specialist, we have covered AU a bunch over here. And this is pretty close to the double immunity necklace challenge that Sarah and Parvati won in AU versus the World.
Now, to be fair, 49 did film prior to that season airing. So
I know. So
production gets a little bit of a leeway here.
But it is a little bit, it is an AU kind of style challenge for sure.
And you know what? Is it the most fair challenge? No. I mean, no challenge is fair in Survivor. But, I mean, they go out there and make sure everyone's leg angles were at the same angle.
Crazy.
With a protractor. So they pay attention to it. It's a fun challenge. But this isn't something that I'd be like, yes, this is totally one that we would give it two immunity necklaces out on. And, like you said, there are two instances in Winners at War when we get it, right? We get it the first time at the merge with Get a Grip. And then we have it this time with When It Rains, It Pours. And this one's so fascinating. And what makes this so interesting compared to what we saw in the new, just in the new era in general, and what we saw in 49 this week, because as I'm rewatching this challenge in Winners at War, it has the temptations, like you said, right? And it was weird because that temptation ended the challenge because you had the two of the three remaining women and one of the remaining men step down for it. Why don't we get temptations in these type of challenges? Especially because that challenge lasted 15 minutes and it got a temptation. This challenge last night went, 40, 50 minutes?
Yeah, something
might be one of the longest challenges we've seen and in the new era.
People, they're dropping out for food. Like, Ben was like, hey, Jeff, you got peanut butter and cookies? I'll drop out. And Jeff's like, no. But wait, now I have it. But if Jeff left and did a temptation for an endurance challenge again, I'm in heaven here because this is classic Survivor.
Is it just because of the new era of it all? Is that why we're not getting temptations in these challenges anymore? Because, I mean, most of the time, I don't know exactly how, I don't think we've seen an endurance challenge go as long as this one last night in quite some time.
We did just get that reward too. Yeah. So like depending on the reward schedule, but I still think a temptation in place of a reward would be fun.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it was just, it harkens back to a time in Survivor's past that we don't get that much anymore. Yeah. And I don't know if it's like the philosophy of the new era where we don't get temptations because I don't know if it's like,
I think they're dropping.
I think they are too, because they're not getting as much food, and maybe that's why they're saying, okay, we're not going to do Temptations because we're worried too many people will drop. But if they want to really expedite these endurance challenges for
just add a temptation.
Temptations, because people will drop, right? Especially in the situation where on 49 we have Savannah just keep telling Sophie, I'm not going to drop.
Yeah, so
looking at her, there was no way she was going to drop. I think Savannah could have gone for much longer than she went.
Exactly. And so, Sophie then having some temptation come out, being like, okay, I know Savannah is locked in. I'm also decently locked in, but I'm kind of working with Savannah / I have an angle where I'm probably not the vote. Let me get some food out of this. Same with how Nick does it in Winners at War, where he's like, I'm going to go for the food. I feel all right now, but going to go for the food and tell Tony I want a fire token.
But Winners at War is a little weird because they had this survivor economy that no one could figure out because there was no consistent value for fire tokens. But it was also weird because in this specific instance, the one thing Nick had to do was make sure Tony didn't win that challenge. Yeah. Like, that was literally his only task. And the fact that he stepped down and gives Tony the win is ridiculous. Mainly because it results in Kim going home, and I will never forgive him for it. But that's the fascinating thing is you have Savannah and Sophie going out here. These two, supposed challenge beasts. One of them's the challenge beast, and one's the one that's won two immunity challenges. Make sense. It's okay. But you compare that to Winners at War to a classic challenge, like When It Rains, It Pours, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said, Denise is so locked in on that challenge. And you see both Michelle and Kim step down. Kim probably regretting it because she gets voted out right afterwards.
I mean, her final words, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not right? Final words because Edge, but anywho. Yeah.
And then Nick also stepping down at that point, like ending the challenge. Like Jeff says in that, as the challenge is ending, like it's an unprecedented ending to a Survivor challenge.
Right.
We have seen Survivor challenges been like, okay, we're going to determine who the winner is here.
What them doing it so late in the game too. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if I like the two immunity necklaces this late into the game. I think we need to have all the options open here. I don't think we should have one man and one woman immune. Yes, you want to run this challenge, so just do it. Just run the challenge. Have the boys versus the girls here, and just whoever wins it, wins it.
I wonder if this is something that in testing, it became very apparent that the women had a distinct advantage over men.
It possibly could have had that.
I mean, now listen, I don't want to put people in the boxes or anything. I happen to know that men don't work on the same muscles that you need for this type of thing as much as women do.
I don't know.
And that is men, get out there and work on your hip flexors, work in your abs and your core. Like, get out there and do that because you're just going to be put to shame. Because honestly, I am fairly certain Savannah just wins this straight out if she is playing as anyone, the way that she was just rock solid in this challenge.
Yeah, Steven was doing pretty well, but he was still at the same time shaking.
Yeah, he was shaking a bit, and it wasn't anywhere near Savannah hadn't moved for nearly an hour.
Lovely. Yeah. We also want to talk about All-Stars here, where we have a dual immunity necklace. We have, instead of this mass endurance challenge, you can kind of see the two sides going for it. We have a men's heat and a women's heat. First, they do the Borneo style last gasp, where they just dunk their heads underwater and
hold their breath for as long as possible.
Hold their breath. So we have Kathy and Rob winding up winning overall immunity here, but after we get the last two women underwater and the last two men underwater, they then have to do another task to fully determine who wins immunity. So it's not just an all-out endurance of holding your breath, you then have to do a physical slash endurance challenge after that, which is where they have like that ladder underneath the water and they have to crawl across, release the boot, keep releasing the buoys, and wind up on shore. And this is a, I kind of like this edition of the double immunity necklace because it really feels like you gotta work for it a little bit more, or like evens maybe the playing field of like, I just gotta last longer and then I can beat them in this challenge. I know it.
Yeah, this is a fascinating approach to this because it is an instance that happens at the merge, obviously. And it almost feels like this, it's such a weird old school Survivor challenge, right? Where it's like, yeah, we do this thing. It's brought up in two parts because that's how this works, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a distinct advantage to the men and women in this? Maybe. Like, I'm trying to figure out what the through line is as to why we're deciding to give out two immunities at some of these points. And I can't figure it out. Sometimes at the merge, I think it makes sense.
Or like maybe one vote after the merge, but like merge, you want to give some people a chance to mingle, whatever. It's not half the tribe. It is just two people. I'm chill with it. Maybe even until like, I just think eight is a little bit, 8-9 is still kind of a little bit too late in the game because they're like pivotal numbers because we're at 9, right?
Yeah.
So odd numbers are always when interesting votes happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're taking away two potential votes. Like parts of the vote people being voted for, you're taking two people instead of just the one person. Like if Savannah won, now, you know, Steven's also an option.
Yeah, it's true, right? And we even see that, like, Savannah winning this challenge. You just made it so it's there are higher chances that Savannah wins this challenge, mm-hmm. which isn't a bad thing, whatever. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it gave us some more drama in this episode, for sure.
Absolutely. But it's so much different in the new era than it was back in All-Stars, because in All-Stars, there aren't idols floating around, too, right? Like, yes, mm-hmm. you're eliminating two people from being possibly voted out of a pool of 10,
mm-hmm.
But it's not like you're taking two people out of a pool of 9, and there's also two idols floating around, and a knowledge is power, right? There's just all these other elements in the new era that it's like, okay, now you're making it so that realistically, there's only like 4 people who can go home.
Right. And especially since Savannah won immunity, Rizzo has an idol. What are you going to do? Like, mm-hmm. you can't vote for them. I mean, you can, but he's just going to be safe.
Yeah.
So, and then maybe find the idol again. So there's still a lot of issues with being so late in the game because people are saving their advantages for crucial votes. A lot of people would be blindsided at a merge vote because mm-hmm. there's so many people and moving parts and things like that, that they think they're fine. That why would it be me who goes home? So having that extra immunity at the merge or even one vote in, I don't think is that much of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, so like All-Stars and like some of the early seasons, we are merging at 10, and so if you have a double immunity at 9, we're in the same situation here, but it's also still early days with alliances at that point, so like it being at a crucial point here, we're deep into the game where we're not as deep into the game at 9 in a different season. That
yeah.
starts at 16.
Yeah, I think 49 benefits from the fact that we are kind of in this more voting blocky type of season.
Hmm.
And it is a little more fluid of the season with all these people floating in the middle, because otherwise this could just be, but maybe that's the argument for it being a good thing too, because like if two people in the minority alliance on a season dominated by a big alliance win this, that's huge, right? It could kind of force the hand, or is it just prolonging the inevitable, which sometimes we get with immunity challenges, right? Like where it's just like, I don't know, look at like Brett Clouser in Samoa, right? Like sometimes you just win and it's just like, hey, you're supposed to be going home. All you're doing is delaying the inevitable. Eventually you're going home as soon as that necklace isn't around you.
We are sticking with the challenges this episode, and we're going into our Outlast portion, and we're going to talk giving up rewards. So we have Christina give up her reward for Jawan. Jawan in the secret scene and also in the episode was like, don't pick me, I'm bad luck. Are you sure you want to pick me? I haven't won a reward. I'm not going to, you know, do anything for you guys. And then Christina wins the challenge and she wants to give up her reward to Jawan. And in this moment, it felt so genuine. And we didn't even get a confessional from her being like, that was a game move. I wanted to try and pull Jawan closer to me. She just felt bad for Jawan and wanted to give him food.
Yeah. And based on, again, like, we have to kind of go into like a secret scene, which we don't like doing that often, but seeing that schoolyard pick and the secret scene and everyone being like, Rizzo being like, I'm picking Jawan so that I can get him, hopefully get him his first win. And Sophie Valeri voting on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like voting on Jawan is like, I hope Jawan wins. So I'm going to root for Jawan. It very much seems like Christina was just being very genuine in wanting to give this reward to Jawan. Is it the smartest move? I don't think so. Don't feed your opponents. It's just my opinion. Right. It's always been my opinion. I'm pretty harsh when it comes to giving rewards to people. Mm-hmm. I actually had a lot of respect for Jawan saying, no, I want to earn this. But that being said, just
like what he was saying of like, I wasn't going to take it. I needed the encouragement to take it because I'm so like stuck in my own head. I can't accept a favor. And like, I feel that. I feel that like need to earn it, but also that, no, this is yours. I don't want to take what's yours. Like you're sacrificing for me, but why?
Yeah. And it's so fascinating because we didn't have a single confessional about it. Like, there was nothing from another player talking about Christina giving up this reward.
And especially with Jawan not voting with Christina. And they were on opposite sides of the vote, and she did this nice thing for him. So the fact that we didn't get any, like, talk about it is a little crazy.
Yeah, but Survivor's definitely just trying to frame it as this is a genuine moment, right?
Like, even if it was still genuine, it's like, I still want Christina to be like, people are going to think this is a game move, but I literally just wanted Jawan to have a reward or something like that. Like, any just little tidbit would have been
Or even, like, a Sage confessional being like, okay, I see what you're, like, Sage rolling her eyes and being like, Christina, I see what you're doing here. This is a game move, right? We didn't even have any of that commentary coming out, which was fascinating. Because normally in these instances, and we will talk about a couple of them in a minute here, that's usually what people are talking about. It's like, oh, this is such a game move.
Yeah. I mean, that was the first thing out of people's mouths when Sarah did that in Winners at War with Nick and the Chinese food. It was his birthday, and she was like, I don't like Chinese. Nick, here you go. And everyone was like, shady, because it's Winners at War. Everybody is here, and everything is under a microscope because they are so – everyone's a threat in their own right. And so Sarah is that type to give up a reward for reasons game-wise, but also she is just a genuine person in the game and would do that for someone of you want, it's your birthday, you want this reward, I'm good, here you go.
When Sarah does this, it's definitely a game move. Like, there's no questioning about it. There is a game aspect to it.
But I also still think she is that type to just give up a reward.
I think that's why it's a game move for her, is because she is that type, right? Because she is that type of person who really revels in playing in the middle and making very strong social connections. That's why everyone's viewing this as a game move, and that's why it is ultimately a game move for her. But also, if you get a reward and you don't like it, why take it yourself? Like, yes, okay, you need nourishment and stuff, but if you're going to go on a reward, I'm just thinking, like, if I go on a reward and it's like, I don't know, Mexican food or something, right? And it's just littered with cilantro, that is going to be a miserable experience for me because I'm one of those people who cilantro tastes like soap for.
Yeah, and we have the pizza rewards of like everything pizzas and there's no cheese in sight. I'm like, I don't know how much I want this.
I get turning down sustenance is a bad idea. This is fried chicken. And I mean, that is just like a lot of protein. So you want that for sure. But it's so difficult not to view this as a game move. Mm-hmm. And when you have someone of Sarah's caliber who is known for making these social connections, it's no wonder it's viewed as a game move there. And ultimately, it does make her connection with Nick strong enough that despite them being in opposition to each other for the majority of the game, she can still kind of rely on him when necessary in the end of the game.
Yeah. And in San Juan del Sur, it was also the same thing of like, I want to pull someone a little bit closer on my side because John and Jacqueline here are in the middle of Jeremy and Natalie versus Josh and Reed. And so Natalie and Jeremy decide we'll step down. John and Jacqueline, you go have a nice date night on this reward, on this luxury yacht. And just know who gave it to you, Jeremy, Natalie. So they are trying to solidify these allies. But this was also a whole season of giving up rewards and solidifying this core group.
It was really a big domino in San Juan del Sur when Jeremy and Natalie give up this reward for John and Jacqueline. And it's
two people who aren't blood related.
But that's the thing is, because there's the blood relation in that season, I think that's part of the reason why we see it a lot. Because like, even further on, right, like we get it, oh, well, we want Missy and Baylor to go on this trip together when John gives it up later, right, for like the spa trip. So
he also wants to go to exile.
Yeah, okay, he's also gaming at that point for sure because he wants to go to exile himself. But what we're seeing is this strategy of because you're dealing with pairs, giving up your ward has a bigger benefit because it is impacting two people instead of one.
Right.
So even though Natalie and Jeremy are absolutely putting the pressure on to get John and Jacqueline on their side because it's very necessary for them to move the game forward for them, it's also just this opportunity to have this good gesture and have it stick there because we talk about the sharkiness of Survivor a lot of the time. We talk about how I wouldn't give up my reward for anyone, right? Maybe that's inequivocally the wrong thing to do when there's an instance where there's loved ones playing with you.
Yeah. I think they use it in a really great way, even though it doesn't wind up working for Jeremy, which is also kind of what happens with Christina. It doesn't really wind up working for her. Mm-hmm. But because there's emotional bonds in this, I think it's even more of a good move for Natalie and Jeremy to do this because you're impacting a bond between two people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We're just dealing with this world that's a little different, and I don't think we acknowledge that enough when it comes to the blood versus water seasons. I think we do when it comes to the first blood versus water because of the Redemption Island aspect of it. Everything, they really put this emphasis on the partnerships. We don't get that emphasis as much in San Juan del Sur, but I think it's there, and I think watching the season that way makes it a much more enjoyable watch because you see the different level of strategy that these people have to go get into in order to really make their way through the game.
Exactly. So I'm really excited that we saw this kind of new school vibe of something. I know we praise a lot of the old school, but having this new school element of giving up rewards in the new era, because this is something we haven't seen. And especially since all the new era people talk about how scarce and how starving they are, for Christina to sacrifice that for Juwan is a really great moment that we got this episode.
I have to ask McKenna, did you have the same fear I did as Jeff described this reward and he started fried chicken and waffles just started going off in your head?
Oh no, I did not have that at all. That went in one ear and out the other.
He paused so long before saying French fries, and I was just like, Jeff, if you say waffles right now, I'm just done. Like, I can't do it. I can't do this again. You can't do this to us 2 seasons in a row. Don't make them chant fried chicken and waffles again. Luckily, they didn't, so we didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah. All right. This has
Before we wrap up, I have a question for you. Because I think there was a very relevant to us thing that was announced this week. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we got the announcement that the Survivor 50 premiere is going to be 3 hours long, which I don't know. I'm pretty excited about that. We have to figure out like logistics of podcasting a 3-hour finale, but it's fine. That's a February problem. But also in the lead up to the premiere of Survivor 50, CBS is going to be airing 10 classic episodes of Survivor. We don't know what they are. All we know the exact time slots they're in. So we know there is not a single episode longer than an hour.
Yeah, it's going to be 10 of the 22 episodes we picked for best episode.
That being said, I don't know if that's true. I'm sure we're going to get some of those defining episodes there. So if you haven't checked out our defining episode series for all of the cast members from Survivor 50, 2 more will be added to it at the end of season 49. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't checked those out because those are probably the episodes that will be aired. Some of them will be. The one caveat, I think, I don't know if the episode we picked for Jenna will be the Borneo episode they air. And
I doubt they'll air Borneo.
I'm 99% sure we see a Borneo episode. I'm right there. It's the Marooning. I think we see the first episode of Survivor in this batch of 10 episodes. And I think it's the first episode they show.
Okay. I can see that because of like the history of it all. Do we see the finale of like Winners at War then?
Maybe. I don't think so. No, because it's too long. Like I said, we know the time slots, so we know there's no episode longer than an hour. We know we have no double episodes, so it eliminates a lot of the premieres.
No new era repeats.
Nothing after season 45. 45 is where we switch to the 90 minutes. Not that I think they would air that anyways. I actually think these will all be like classic
episodes. Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they choose. Do they decide to repeat it within a season? What seasons they choose? And I will be judging CBS as always.
I think like one of the more fascinating conversations is like, I think these are obviously going to be episodes that feature the players from Survivor 50. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. I do think like I said, the Marooning is just a celebration of Survivor by showing that episode. I think it would be very important to show that. I think you're going to see something like the Martyr Approach, but with something like, you want an episode that features Ciri, are you picking one that features Ciri and some of the other players she's played with on seasons, right? Like, or do you show something like the 3-2-1, which I think is just like a solid episode of Survivor that really does show it off. Are you using these episodes to highlight specific players, or are you just like celebrating Survivor as a whole? I think it's a conversation that'll be really interesting the more details we get about these 10 episodes. And I guarantee you in some capacity, there will be content about it from some combination of the specialists at the time.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited, especially because I also just got the buff box that Survivor and Paramount put out of a bunch of reprints and remakes of the older buffs, and they had, you know, China in there, they had Kageyan in there, they had, you know, certain seasons that like don't have some representation in 50, and do they air something from, you know, maybe the buff box?
Well, that's a good question. Like, do we get a Winners at War episode despite the fact that there's no one from another war? Do we get something like This Is Extortion, which is considered one of the greatest episodes of Survivor ever?
Right.
Despite the fact that no one from Winners at War is on 50. I'm really excited to see what CBS does with this. Mm-hmm. And I think it will really give us an idea of what to expect from 50. If this ends up being highlighting certain players, we'll be like, okay, cool. Like, thanks for spoiling the season for us, CBS. Mm-hmm. If it ends up being a focus on like Survivor, it's going to make me so excited for 50. Not that I'm not going to be excited for 50 either way, but if this shows to be like a celebration of the show of Survivor, it just means 50 is going to be that much better.
Yeah, for sure. Well, John, wrap us up. What do we got going on this week?
Phil and Will discussed the episode on Wednesday. It was a great recap. A lot of conversation, right? Like, we're at this really weird point in 49 where we're dissecting the edit a lot because of what we know about the future of Survivor. So take that out. Phil and Blake were joined by Alexa today for Digging Deeper. We love that. Sounds like Alexa. I'm not promising anything, but if you listen to that podcast, it sounds like Alexa might be around the next couple of weeks. We might see. She might be around a little bit more. McKenna and Kyle broke down the latest episode of The Amazing Race. McKenna wasn't a big fan of it.
No, I had words.
I'm on the Kyle side of things. I actually really enjoyed this episode. Phil will be joined by Troyzan on Monday for the Predictions and Power Rankings. That's going to be fun. It's always fun listening to how Troy is breaking down a season and what he has to say. Degwith has a Matt chat at some point. Phil did not tell.
Jake O'Kane?
Possibly, but not locked in yet. So keep an eye out. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, ring that bell. Then you'll know when that Matt chat goes live. And over on the Patreon, lots of content. And like we mentioned earlier, half off your first month if you subscribe to the Patreon before the finale of 49. So if you want to try it out, now's the time to do it. There's so much content. You can listen to McKenna and I talk Winners at War this weekend. You can listen to Every Season Matters on Kara Mowen right now, which is a very interesting season to dissect. There's so much more going on there. There's the TED Talks with the rotating content that Tegwith does with everyone on the channel. There's Phil and I are talking movies. It's the holiday season. We're going to be talking holiday movies coming up. Just so much content over there. So give it a shot. Now's the time. And then we're going to be right back here next week. Next week will be a little weird because you Americans have a holiday.
Yeah, so John, being Canadian, doesn't have Thanksgiving next week. Kyle and I will not be live on Thursday. John and I will not be live on Thursday. We are going live on Friday at 11:30 a.m. with Kyle first for The Amazing Race, then hitting you at noon with John and I on The Rewind. So we are excited to bring that to you on Friday this next week. So thank you, everybody, for watching, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.